I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night. Get to do another Stranger Things episode, and that makes me so damn happy. Natalia Dyer is here on the show. Hello, welcome, and congratulations.
Hi, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So we have a lot of Stranger Things stuff to talk about, but we need to pave our way there. And the first thing we do on Ladies Night, which I didn't warn you about, is we play dicey questions. Usually I have a dice tower and it's a little more interactive, but the dice tower didn't travel to New York with me. So I have 8 numbers here and you'll pick 3 of them. And then depending on what questions you get, that's where we're going to start.
Okay.
So number 1 through 8, what is your first pick?
Let's go with 4.
Solid choice right there, because you already got a Stranger Things themed question. This one makes me very happy. We're calling it Running Up That Hill. I know you've probably been asked a million times what your song would be, so I'm going to flip it around and ask for your movie. If Vecna had you in his mindscape, what movie could your friends play in order to bring you out of it?
Wow, that's a good one. My all-time favorite movie is something called, it's called The Fall, but I think also, I was just talking about Pirates of the Caribbean last night. It's just like a very quotable, I could watch that movie all day. So maybe Pirates, I think.
I mean, Pirates is solid, but can we go back to The Fall for a minute? Because that is a stunning film.
I know, it's breathtaking. It's gorgeous. And I don't think you can stream it anywhere. And I keep talking, I'm like, you have to watch this movie, but I think I have to get a DVD and a DVD player to show people this movie. I guess you could like illegally download it, but just so, so beautiful, so good.
Oh, I'm definitely doing my research on that because that is well worth recommending to everybody. Tarsem Singh is absolutely an incredible visionary.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty young when it came out, and I remember I saw it in the theaters, and I was just like, wow, that was something else. You know, that just took me somewhere completely different.
Pure movie magic. I love it. All right, number 2 for you. What is your next number?
How about 7?
Okay, here's another good one. So 7 is IMDb trivia. I get a little obsessed with looking at everybody's trivia page, and I was shocked that you had very few things on your page. So if you could add a super random fact about yourself to that lineup of facts, what would it be?
A super random fact about myself. I have double jointed elbows and hypermobile elbows. That feels pretty random.
Okay.
I don't know how the trivia stuff gets on there on IMDb. That's interesting. I never really looked into it, but.
Well, we'll find out if interviews have anything to do with it, if double jointed elbows pops up next week.
We'll see. Yeah. Interesting.
I have to ask you now for a demonstration. Is that something you can show us?
Yeah. I mean, Well, I've got these pretty, let's see if I can get this off.
I had someone show me their double jointed thumbs recently. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. They're a little funny. They're just a little quirk. Double jointed thumbs, though, I don't have that.
Yeah, it was, that was like a little bit of an alarming demonstration I got where those thumbs bent in all the wrong ways.
It's always a little alarming when it's not your own body and you just see it. It's like, whoa.
Yep. All right. You have one more pick here. What is your last number?
I'm going to go with 5.
Okay. Here's another one that I love. This one is called High Low. Can you give us one audition high and then also an audition low and tell us what you learned from that low?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Audition high. I mean, Stranger Things is a pretty high. And low. It was one of those things that it was an audition that I had. There were like 3 stages, and at least for the first 2, I really thought I just screwed it up, just did not do good. I walked out of there being like, I think I'm going to quit. I think I'm, you know, what am I doing here? Why am I even trying? That was awful. You're terrible. But then getting the feedback of like, oh, they loved you. You know, it's a really, the audition world is such a funny mental space because you think you have a read on people. They could be like really nice and like you never hear from them, or like they say nothing and they're like, they really loved you. So it's a bit, yeah, I feel like that alone is a bit of a high-low situation, low in the moment, but then, you know, paid off in the end.
I could see that. Just to follow up on that a little, so you walk out of the audition thinking that you didn't give them what they wanted, but then you find out that they did like you. What is it like going into the next round? How do you kind of find the balance between how you felt personally, but also knowing that they actually liked what you did before?
Yeah, it's wild, right? It's a whole like internal roller coaster. You know, you think, okay, yeah, okay, well, good. I got my foot in the door again, and like, I'll be good. I'll be on it. I'll like, I don't know. It's funny. I can't even exactly remember why I felt so off about it, thinking back. But I just remember leaving both of those like, no, just quit, just stop now. I don't know. It's a really funny thing. Nowadays, you do a lot more tapes. So you know, there's less of those, you know, waiting room moments and going in and the adrenaline and then leaving and either feeling like, you know, just like, ah, you like nailed it, you feel amazing, or you're like, you know, just throw it in the trash and you're like, well, that sucked. Well, I sucked. You know, actors, really fun people, really.
I seriously give you all the credit in the world as someone who walks away from like itty bitty interviews thinking like, I could have done better. That sucked. I can't imagine putting your craft on the line like that and being assessed in the moment. It's just like, that's just another level of being able to process feedback that I can't compute.
Yeah, but it's fun though, right? It's like, you know, you take the highs and the lows of it.
That's why you're over there and I'm nice and happy over here celebrating all of your incredible work.
Oh, well, I think what you do is incredible as well. I mean, interviewing people, getting people to talk, I think is that's not a skill to be slept on.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And it's a good segue to get us into the meat of our conversation. So every single Ladies Night episode starts here. What is the movie, the performance, the personal experience, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor and nothing else?
Gosh. You know, I started out doing theater a bit, and I thought that's where I was going to go. I think one movie that I saw when I was, it must have been in elementary school, I think for sure, because I remember trying to tell other kids that it was really good. But The Phantom of the Opera, the film, came out, and I watched that movie so many times, and I just thought it was beautiful, and I thought the music was beautiful, and I thought Emmy Rossum's performance was beautiful. You know, it's hard to say. It was like, is that the thing that like made me want to be an actor? I don't know, but definitely it was like, oh, I had dreams of being on Broadway and being in Phantom of the Opera, I think, after watching that. So that was something. That's one of my earlier memories of seeing something. I was like, oh, that's great. I want to do that.
Those early obsessions definitely make a big impression.
Yeah, they do.
So then do you remember the point where, I don't know, you said to yourself or maybe to your parents, like, this is the career that I want to pursue, and maybe deciding on what the first steps to take would be in order to get there?
Well, it's funny. It's actually, it was very organic. My mom was a mom, a really lovely mom, and she just wanted, I had an older sister when I was, I mean, I still have an older sister. I have a younger sister as well, but I just had the older one then. And she was really into, you know, finding sort of like extracurriculars for her children. And I mean, I did every, like we did, you know, soccer and ice skating and dance class and painting and sculpture and, you know, sports. And you know, we try it for a little bit. And then if we didn't like it, it's like, okay, we'll find, you know, something else that you like. It was a bit of, you know, like a privilege and a luxury and really lovely of her to do that. But I was at a summer camp and it kind of got into this drama class and, I just really liked it. And, you know, I think she could tell, and we started like going to auditions just locally for like little like community theater things. And, you know, it just kind of like took, I just was very in love with that world and doing it. And my parents are not, you know, my mom didn't know anything about it, but she was just very committed to like taking me to auditions and taking me to rehearsals and just like allowing me to keep wanting to, you know, being able to do the thing that I really enjoyed doing as a kid. And then, yeah, you know, at some point, I don't know, you start to just keep doing auditions and things. And, you know, it never really felt like, oh, like career for the rest of my life. That's my income. That's, you know, I never really thought about it too much in that way until I got into maybe like, you know, college and just, you know, kind of like supporting yourself financially and, you know, looking at like, well, what else do you want to do? What else can you see yourself doing? But it's a very, you know, it's a tough industry to decide that it's what you want to be, because so much of it is out of your control.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the most intimidating elements of it. You brought up college. I have to ask, when you studied at NYU in Gallatin, was it an acting discipline at all, or major mixture, whatever they came up with?
I took maybe one like summer acting class through Tisch, just because I kind of just was like missing having the space to do something. But no, I was really, I mean, I've loved Gallatin is such a great school in the sense that it just gives, you know, so much exploration and so much, you know, autonomy over what you're learning. And, you know, I think there's a certain person who goes to that school and is like, okay, I want to do like music, business, psychology, you know, in a certain context, or like very like niche things. And it's great for that. But there's people like me as well, who's just like, I don't know, I just want to like take all of these really interesting sounding classes and figure it out. And the nice thing is they encourage that, but I took a lot of really random classes and started looking a lot more at things like language and translation and like semiotics. And, you know, I was only here for 2 years, but I, you know, before the show started and kind of had to take a break from it, but yeah, I was really just all over the place, which was lovely and fun.
I tried so hard to transfer to Gallatin, but I was too far into it. I never would have finished my degree.
Did you go to NYU?
I did. I went to College of Arts and Science for journalism, where it was either broadcast or print, and there was no understanding that anything could exist in between, and I found it very frustrating and tried to make my own major, but didn't work out. Still had a lovely time at NYU though.
Yeah, it's nice, you know. I do think it's a nice introduction to just like the city. You know, it's not your typical college campus experience.
Not at all. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world. I loved it. So you said that you jumped into Stranger Things and that meant closing the book on NYU. I mean, like now after the show's success, it seems like a no-brainer to an outsider. But at the time, was there any like, should I or shouldn't I? Or did you know at that point that that was the right path for you to take then?
Yeah, there was definitely... I mean, it happened pretty fast. I think we got cast in August and I was meant to go back like maybe, you know, like a month or two later for the next semester. So I'd already signed up for all of my classes for the next semester. You know, I think, you know, in some ways there is like maybe a slight hesitation, probably more so from my parents, but I mean, they understand that it was, you know, it was like the early days of Netflix, and they had done like, you know, a couple of really, really good shows, but it wasn't what it was today, is what we think about as Netflix. But it was still, it was really exciting. And I think, you know, there was this idea that, you know, follow it and see where it goes. And like, you know, school is there later. You can always go back to school, which is a nice, you know, thought, probably more complicated in reality. But yeah, it was, it, you know, I was very excited. It felt, you know, it felt cool. And the project itself was really different and interesting. So yeah, I was pretty like, yeah, I'm going to do this for a while. I can see what happens.
Every path is different. You got to roll with decisions like that. Otherwise I feel like there's no moving forward.
Yeah, no, right. I think so. You know, you just got to kind of go with your gut sometimes.
Before I jump into Stranger Things full force, I did want to go back to your very first film experience. I know you were really young when you did the Hannah Montana, the movie, but I do always find that first professional on-set experiences can make a pretty big impression on someone. So looking back, what expectations did that film set for you in terms of what it could be like to work on more movies and shows in the future? And then, I don't know, did your future films meet those expectations? If not, maybe improve on them.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting because I was still in Nashville at the time, and it wasn't a massive filming town aside from like commercials and music videos. So having this sort of large film roll through, it was very, I think, exciting in the small film community and like acting community there to have this big thing rolling through. And it was a pretty, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's like, hard to think like in comparison to what I know now, but at the time it felt like a massive production. They had huge crane shots, they had like all of these extras in this open field. You know, it was the first like trailer experience I had, you know, hair and makeup and costume, and like it's very, yeah, it's, you know, it's exciting. My mom was there with me because I wasn't 18. She remembers it very fondly as well, but there is, you know, it was only a handful of days of work, but it, you know, it's a very addictive place to be on set. You know, just the energy of all these moving pieces and getting, you know, going here and going there, and then, you know, these cameras. I do think back in the day, I mean, I was, you know, I had no concept of like film or what, you know, what it means, like, you know, film acting or like the nuances or the jargon, or, you know, you're just like, oh, they're just like, okay, they take you and there's a camera and then there's rolling and action and cut, and it's very, you know, a lot, you're just doing the thing that you know to do, but there's so much going on around you. But yeah, it was, you know, it's a funny one to look back on, but I do look back on it fondly at this point.
All right, let's just jump into Stranger Things. Actually, before I even do that, I'll just tell everyone, go seek out Yes God Yes. There's an excellent movie that you did that we caught up at South by Southwest, what was it, 2018, 2019 for that one? But that's a great watch. So just to throw out another recommendation that isn't Stranger Things for everyone.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Woman-led and written and directed, and then just a lot of cool people working on a very small film, but yeah.
Highly recommend it. All right, so Stranger Things. Going back to, I guess, the audition process a little bit here, what is the biggest difference between the Nancy that you were first presented when you first booked the role compared to the person who she turned out to be?
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, the guns, the clothes, the perm. yeah, you know, there is an essence of her that I think is carried through really nicely, that kind of, you know, ties these two ends of the spectrum together pretty well, which is like this sort of like intuition, gut, instinct, to sort of, you know, follow her, you know, her own brain and her own path. But I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I think she was a lot more concerned with appearances and, you know, school and success and achieving in, you know, in her small understanding of her small town. You know, I think she always had was very ambitious, but I just think her ideas of what that means and what that can be have shifted wildly. And she's really kind of, you know, stepped into this totally new, exciting, brave, powerful side of herself. It's fun. It's fun to play.
I absolutely cannot get enough of that evolution and watching her just like step up and, you know, not necessarily no fear, but it does feel like a very like a reasonable, believable balance between fear and drive, and that drive coming from the people that she loves. It's just like a very beautiful arc that's been extremely effective.
Yeah, I mean, the Duffers have written some really lovely females and female arcs, which is, you know, it's an ensemble show, but I do think often the females steal the storylines.
I will confirm that. You seriously, like the five of you now.
Yeah.
Or at least the five of like the younger ensemble, right, is just running away with things. Looking back at the very beginning of it, it's absolutely mind-blowing how this thing popped when it first came out. So what would you say is one thing that changed due to that success in terms of how the show was made in the production process? But then on the other hand, what is something that stayed totally consistent since day one of working on Stranger Things?
I think, you know, I probably got a bigger budget, I'm pretty sure, for the next ones after the first one. I also don't know if the brothers would have addressed the Barb issue in the way that they did. I think that was sort of a, you know, fans were really upset about Barb, understandably, but I think they were like, oh, well, we have to address her in the next season. But this, I mean, I do think that, you know, the people and the environment that we make the show in has been, you know, very consistent and consistently full of just lovely, grounded people who are enjoying making this story together. And that's, you know, that's really nice. You know, I think that it's not a show with a lot of big egos on it. It's, you know, very family-like, which is, it's really lovely to be able to go back to that.
I love hearing that. I know every single set is different, but I am a big believer that you pour so much time and energy and care into making shows and films that company should feel like a family. So it's nice to hear that.
Yeah, I agree. No, totally. Totally.
So to kind of turn that question towards the cast, because sometimes I'll play a superlative game and I'll ask this, and I'm curious your opinion on it. Who of all of the Stranger Things cast members would you label the most change? Who's grown the most from day one of filming to, you know, the actor they have become today?
Oh my gosh. Wow. It's hard. I mean, all of the kids, they really, I think this season in particular, you know, I don't know, maybe because it's like working with them more, or, you know, they're all 18 now, I think, but all of them have really grown and matured as actors incredibly. I mean, they were always very talented, but I think, you know, being there to sort of witness the, you know, the shifts and the nuances and the performances, and see that firsthand from all of them. And so, you know, I think they have come into themselves individually and really interesting and like, you know, I don't, you know, very proud. I mean, like this season, Sadie has such an incredible season, and she was always very, very talented to work with. But I think it's, you know, it's just taking it to another level. It's just seeing somebody, yeah, like grow into themselves. It's really inspiring, you know.
Not that I ever doubted her, but I still can't get over how good she is in episode 4 and episode 9 in particular.
So good. She's so good.
All right, going back to Nancy specifically now. So she's obviously grown a lot over the course of the 4 seasons. So looking back at all the scenes you filmed, is there any in particular that you would say defined Nancy for you the most, where the second you did it or you read it, something about it made you think, like, I really get her right now and I know what she's capable of?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I think whenever she sort of, it's interesting whenever she sort of blatantly throws herself into danger, I think, because there's something about her initially, at least, that felt maybe a little more timid and a little more play by the rules. And I think, you know, things like season one, even like going into the tree, you know, like getting, like the first time she's like getting, you know, got a gun and like, you know, and I think there's a lot of times in this season where every time she just, you know, is kind of like, I'm gonna, you know, I don't care about necessarily like me or, you know, the fact that I'm not thinking about it as much as I'm trying to figure this out or get to the bottom of it or stop something. I think that says a lot, you know, that she is just very kind of focused, and she's not perfect. And I think she makes a lot of mistakes, and she, you know, I think within that there's caveats in it of pros and cons, but you know, I think it does really an inform, you know, character who's just like, just decides like, this is what I'm going to do. This is what we're doing. This is what needs to be done in this moment right now. And like, I'm going to do it.
I don't want to describe these as impulsive decisions because I think they're decisions that she earned the right to make, but she does often have a habit of just jumping into the deep end when she needs to step up. So given that kind of knee-jerk type of decision, is there any particular moment for Nancy that required, I guess, a little discussing with the Duffers or any of the writers or directors, something where like you got it, but you needed to talk it through to understand fully why Nancy would choose, you know, A or B?
Oh gosh, yeah, I'm sure there's probably loads of them. And some of them, I mean, you know, sometimes decisions are made because, oh, we needed to like move this along a particular way. I mean, you know, there's a lot we don't see on screen probably that I have questions about, like maybe her gun training and like how often she goes and like shoots these guns and all of that stuff. But there's, you know, I think, really with her, some of the decisions I like to discuss are a little more of the like personal relationship, you know, interpersonal dynamics of how she talks to people sometimes or who she, you know, thinks about. There's one in season three, I remember that Nancy and Jonathan have a scene, and there was an initial version that, I mean, we both felt was a little like harsh, and I, you know, she was just very like very, very focused to the point of like, you know, I was like, would she say that? Like, would she not care at all about this? And they're very, the nice thing is they're very open to talking with us and kind of, you know, working out what feels right. But sometimes, you know, in such a massive show with so many like plot driven, exciting elements, I think, you know, sometimes you really want to like fine tune the personal, you know, character moments.
Makes sense. You have an exceptional team of writers working on this show, but I do have to imagine that after four seasons, you know, the actors playing these characters probably also have an extremely deep understanding of who they are and could speak to that quite a bit as well.
Yeah, we love them, you know, and you care, and like, you know, these writers are juggling a million things at once, and you're just like, okay, but listen to this. Like, okay, but what about this line? What if I said this instead? And it's, you know, it's very like self-serving in a way, but self-serving for the character. You're like, I want them to, you know, have the best possible arc and outcome.
I get it. Speaks to a company behind a show being a family and a team. One person can't do it all on their own. Every single person down to a PA is absolutely vital to the production.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Think about that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Moving towards season four now, we do wind up getting the necessary broad strokes for what life was like for Nancy between the events of season three and four. But is there any additional character work you found yourself needing to do on the side on your own that maybe we don't see or hear in the actual episodes, but we could feel informing your performance?
You know, I think there's a bit, I mean, these days, like there's a lot more physical, you know, things going on that I think, I mean, you know, for example, before the show, I'd never shot a gun before. So there's always a little bit of like, okay, you know, practicing, days of practicing that. And, you know, there's stunts. I'd never dived. I'd dive this season. I'd never dived before, you know. So there's a lot of like, I know Joe, I mean, we did the tank stuff like for the water, and there's, you know, some breathing training. So it usually gets, it's a lot of like physical stuff, but character wise, it's funny, they're very close to us now. I think, you know, we've spent so much time with these characters, it feels very instinctual of sort of, you know, dropping into them now as people.
They feel like very lived-in roles. I think that's why these characters are so lovable and impossible to let go of when the seasons are over.
Yeah.
I bet you'll never guess what I'm going to ask you about next. Just guess.
Could it possibly be a love triangle?
Okay, but here's my first question about this love triangle. At this point in the show, at this point in Nancy's arc, are you even thinking about it as a love triangle, or are you defining it as something different?
Yeah, it's funny. Me personally, these questions are always kind of tough to answer because, I get the concept, and you know, I can see that it's repeating things. But for me, in Nancy, it's not. It's just so much more gray than that and so much more realistic in relationships and just how they evolve and how they change and, you know, not putting everything in a box. And I think, you know, in the context of everything that's going on, it's really hard to be like, who is she going to end up with? And it's like, well, in the world of her characters, like the world is, you know, potentially going to end, and they just had like this giant rift thing and they just narrowly escaped death again. I don't know, maybe who's to say who she's going to end up with. It's a really funny thing, but I like that it interests people still.
I feel like that's a big reason why it interests me, and that usually, admittedly, when there's a lot going on in a show and there is a quintessential love triangle, that's the thing that often interests me least.
Yeah.
But these feel like such deeply personal journeys that are getting at a whole lot more than who's going to wind up with who. It's literally about character growth through each other, regardless of, yeah, you know, how you want to quantify their relationship.
Yeah. No, I think that's well said. That's how it goes to me.
With that in mind, no matter what happens with them from this point on, what do you think is one thing that she gains from Steve that you find influencing your own portrayal of Nancy? And then also, what is something about her experiences with Jonathan that's added a layer to the character that you have enjoyed working with?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think, okay, so for Nancy and Jonathan, I think they really bonded through this sort of outsiderness, I think, which I think our show really is. It's a bunch of outsiders, and they're all outsiders in, you know, very different ways. But I think all of them have an element of just feeling not the same as like kind of the masses. And I think for them, you know, season one, they really bonded over this sense of thinking differently than everybody else. And, you know, I think they sort of helped each other open up. I think there's like a deep, you know, bond and things that they've been through together. There's, you know, that shared trauma thing. And I think with Steve, you know, I think this season, like, he's really surprised Nancy. Like, these are two characters who haven't seen each other in a while. And I think, you know, there was always like warmth from Steve and like love, and there was like a balance. You know, she's the smart girl and he's like the, you know, the jock guy, and there's something about that dynamic that works in a way. But I think, you know, he's really grown up, and I think that impresses her a lot this season, that he's grown up, he's kind of come to terms with things, and he also like cares deeply and is brave, and I think that's something that she aligns with as well. So, you know, it's tricky because they're both, I think they're both of those relationships are really interesting. And, you know, they ask her to be different things in a way. Like maybe, I don't know, like maybe she feels more, I don't know, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this. Like with Jonathan, maybe it's like more of the caretaker. And I think maybe she thinks Steve is a little more caretaking. I don't know. You know, it's a funny thing, especially for someone who's so like, you know, gung-ho and kind of like controlling sometimes.
I could see that. With that in mind, in a sense, so whether it's Steve or Jonathan or literally any single main character in this ensemble, and this is more theorizing because I know you guys, like, they haven't even finished scripting season 5, but going forward, in your opinion at this point, who do you think Nancy would have the most to gain from in terms of another character she could spend time with?
You know what? I think Nancy and Robin, it's a really fun dynamic, and they're so different, but they're both very smart. women, which we love that. We love to see it. We love to play it. We were both really excited about getting to do that this season. And I think it's been, I don't know, from what I've seen, like people seem to enjoy it as well, which is nice. Cause I think it's a nice, gratifying, relationship dynamic.
Count me as one of those people. I have to ask you about working with Maya. So you're working with an incredible ensemble for years, but what is something about her in particular that makes her stand out as a scene partner that you really appreciated?
Oh gosh. I mean, she works. She's very talented. And I think especially in this role is really funny because it's such a, she has so much dialogue sometimes to fit in this little chunk and just in a very like Robin way. And she always nails it. But she's just lovely to play with, you know. She's very giving. She's really fun to watch. She's really fun to kind of play off of. She's very present with it, and that's just such a, you know, that's such a gift to be able to work with.
'Tis a true art to be able to combine suspenseful moments with more humorous beats like she does. I don't understand how she makes those work, but all of her one-liners land.
But she does, and they do, right? Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. Really incredible. Jumping into a specific moment now in episode 8, what was it like for you trying to figure out how much fear to exude when Nancy comes out of Vecna's mindscape, where he basically explains to her what is going to happen? Because after she explains to the group, then all of a sudden she goes back to that fight. So how do you figure out how much fear to convey while also being able to make that pivot back to Nancy wanting to step up and take him down?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think Nancy really does compartmentalize a lot of emotions. You know, I think since season one and everything that they've been through, I think her sort of coping mechanism is just like logic and focus and yeah, and fight and just like, you know, not accepting like that as a reality. Like I can't, not like letting herself crumple into her feelings. And I think with the whole Vecna journey, you know, it's like this thing of like she knows what's going on. It's still like scary, but he's just trying to trick her. And there's a lot of, you know, so she's very smart. And I think, you know, like there's a little bit of that. It's you know, shifting of like, that was insane, but also what can I do about it? I think that's, you know, since season one, it's like, okay, this is wild. This is scary. This is heartbreaking. But like, what can I do to like change that outcome and like to change this feeling in myself probably. But yeah, she's funny. Yeah, she's pretty tough, I think, with herself and her emotions.
I feel like I aspire to be like Nancy in the face of challenging moments where I process it realistically, but then I'm like, okay, now what do I do in order to fix this?
Yeah, no, she's got a quick turnaround for sure. That wouldn't be me at all. I like tend to really crumple in the face of adversity sometimes.
I got a little touch of that myself. All right, so now taking that kind of an idea and applying it to the very last shot of you in Stranger Things 4, where they're all standing there and they're basically looking at Hawkins and the Upside Down side by side. Again, I know you don't know anything about what's to come in season 5, but when you're playing a beat like that and you have to, you know, give off a certain expression so that we know how she's feeling, what are some of your goals for a moment like that, especially with the balance of, you know, terror of what could come, but also that fight that I love in Nancy so much and I want to see more of?
Yes. I mean, that was a funny day. Knife doesn't, you know, spoil the sort of that world of it, but it was like, it was an entire day to shoot that one scene of being on the hill and looking into the distance. And obviously what the shot is that you see in the show is not what we're looking at. So, you know, it's kind of like, imagine this. So we're all standing on this like very, very hot hill all day, just like looking at this line of trees, imagining like something terrible. So I'm, you know, so which moment they catch on camera, you never know. But yeah, I think it's, you know, for Nancy, it's, you know, there's a moment of shock. I think, you know, I think maybe prior to that, there was a little bit more calm or a little more faith and hoping that things would work out. And then seeing that is just, you know, a big, oh no. But I'm sure, you know, in her mind, it's an, oh no. Okay. What are we going to do? You know what I mean?
I look forward to that. Yeah. All right. I'll end with this one. At this point in the show, after everything they go through in Stranger Things 4, what do you think Nancy's biggest weakness is?
I think sometimes, you know, with that compartmentalizing, I think she can block other things out. I think, you know, for example, in this season, I think she was pretty reluctant at first to get on board with Robin. You know, it was kind of like happened and she, you know, decided to go along with it and then got, you know, rewarded out of that dynamic. You know, they figured things out together. So I think sometimes she does have this thing to think that she's right all the time, which I think has served her in the past. But I think, you know, sometimes that is a bit of a blinder to other ideas and people and ways to go about things, and, you know, other people's emotions sometimes. So if anything, I'd say that's probably, you know, for me, that's one of her biggest drawbacks.
All right. Well, season 5 comes. I'm really looking forward to her tackling that. And also that giant situation that's in front of her.
Yeah, that giant just flaming hole in the ground. Yeah.
I must let you go, but I need to thank you for your time today and congratulations. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. But wow, like to see a show like Stranger Things just come out so damn hot and then really keep the bar that high through 4 really complicated seasons is something else.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's such a team, you know, it's everybody who works on the show just is so committed and so talented. So yeah, it's really such a group effort. Just very proud to be a part of it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.